Previously on X-Men.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Granny's Peach Tea, episode 150. Right on the dot.
Holy shit, 150. You know, what's funny is Facebook just reminded me that 3 years ago, I was watching Black Lightning, and I was enjoying the fact that the titular Black Lightning was enjoying a scotch. And I was like, that means... we're going into our third year of this show, or we're in our third year of this show.
We are, man. 3 years ago. Well, yeah, it's a little over 3 years ago because we started in January that year. So
time flies, right?
Sure it does. It flies when you're having fun, though, right?
Absolutely.
But yeah, thanks for joining us as always. If you're joining us on the Facebook live stream, if you're joining us on YouTube or X, which is appropriate these days for us. If you're joining us on the audio-only podcast, we appreciate your support for our pop culture pros. And I'm Ed, and with me as always is Jason. And we got some cool stuff. It's a straightforward episode this week, but good stuff to dive into here because we're continuing our countdown to X-Men 97, which comes out in only a couple of weeks on Disney Plus. So we are continuing our rewatch of the X-Men animated series. So this week, season two, we'll be diving into each episode and sharing our thoughts on that. And we got a Borderlands trailer that we didn't get to last week. That was my bad because it was an oversight on my part. But we're going to do a trailer reaction shortly. Jason, what's up, man? How was your week? What's going on?
Yeah, you know, can't complain. Week's all right. Really, like I got friends here tonight just to... I'll introduce the first one, little Jubilee right here.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Yeah, comic books accurate Jubilee. I don't know if I've talked about this on the show. I must have. It's a comic book podcast we do. But I mean, I am a huge X-Men fan. Like you know, there's Spider-Man and Batman. Clearly, those are my two favorite solos. But like, there is nothing in the comic book canon for me that comes close to holding a torch to the X-Men. And I was looking through my my action figures to see, oh, which ones can I grab? Dude, I have a whole shelf of X-Men. Oh, like, there's 85% of my collection are Spider-Man, Batman, or X-Men.
That sounds about right. I mean, I'm right there with you with the Batman and Spider-Man and... I would say growing up, my favorite team was the X-Men. You know, over time, the Avengers have gotten into there and stuff like that. And I always was partial to the new Fantastic Four.
I love that.
That was a badass team.
I still have those two issues that they were in of the Fantastic Four. Gray Hulk, Wolverine, Ghost Rider, and
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's an unstoppable team, dude.
Oh, those were great comics.
They really were. I don't even remember what the hell happened to the regular Fantastic Four when that.
Oh, Dr. Doom neutralized them like something fierce. He was like, "Yo, guys, you suck. You're in Doom's house now."
So that's exactly what it was.
That's exactly it. I'm quoting verbatim.
Why not? We'll go with it. Whatever. If someone wants to chime in and drop us a comment and call us out, fine, go ahead. if you happen to have the issue in hand, you go for yourself. Yeah, I actually got on board finally with watching Dune Part 1. I did that the other day because I've heard so many like great glowing things about Part 2.
Okay.
And then my friend Steve and Angie, both of them were like, oh, we're not going to go see Dune Part 2. I'm like, I haven't seen the first one. So
have they seen
I don't know about
one?
That. They both did. Angie watched it and like complained about it, which is part of the reason I'm like, I'm not going to go see this then. I mean, this woman over here, she'll watch anything as long as they like put it on camera, you know, like she rarely gives something a bad review. I feel like I've worn off on her a bit, like of giving her, she's been more critical of things.
Right.
But then she's like, oh, wait, so you're not? I'm like, I have to watch the first one. I'm not just going to go into this one in the middle of this shit. So, but I said, I have to finish X-Men Season 2 first. I will not watch Dune until I get my X-Men homework out of the way first. So right. I knocked that out over the course of 2 days again. Like, these X-Men seasons have kind of really, they really do fly by. And then I watched Dune. So, quick. So did you see Dune Part 1?
I didn't.
Do you care? You don't give a shit?
No, that's like I should. I'm a sci-fi geek. Like
exactly. That's what I was getting shit for.
Like I've actually read Philip K. Dick novels, which I've loved, like multiple like multiple times. Like so, like I there's just something I just never. Dune was never put into my purview in the right time, and now I'm like, oh God, I can't read things now. Like it's got to be like science or history or something. Cause like my job is teaching literature. So I'm like, oh, literature. No. So it's too late for me. My only exposure to Dune is that God awful David Lynch movie.
Yes. Which I never saw. I just never cared.
And here's the thing. If you like David Lynch, like I do, it's worth seeing. If you don't care about David Lynch, don't bother. But you and I both need to thank whatever we believe in. For me, it's, you know, nothing, but whatever. I thank nothing that David Lynch directed that movie, because you know what movie he was offered at the same time as he did was Dune?
Dune, the original Dune was 80s, right? 82.
It's like 82,
83. Okay, so I'm just trying to think. The reason I'm asking is I'm thinking of movies that came out back then. So
another sci-fi epic that came out around that time. One might call it a return.
Really? He was offered Return of the Jedi.
He was offered Jedi and he turned it down for Dune.
Woo! Thank God. Because growing up, Jedi was my favorite, actually, until I got older. And I'm like, nah, Empire is where it's at.
And I still think the best part, some of the best stuff in Star Wars is in Jabba's Palace. Like, if Jabba's Palace was the movie, and then somehow Palpatine went away, I mean, I think people would have enjoyed it more.
Well, I don't know, because we found that years later. Apparently, when Palpatine does something somehow, then apparently gets everyone pissed off. I think it's gotten me more mad as time has gone on. Actually, every time I think about it, I get mad.
I don't get mad anymore because that's like a go-to joke for me now. Whenever something like doesn't make sense, I just somehow Palpatine returns.
Yeah, exactly.
The movie.
Yeah, you know, things happen, so it pops up. You know, Palpatine returns, things like that. Thanos returns. You know, whatever. So what?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's not important right now. But yeah, I kind of like, so I was prepared to wrap up the Dune part before we jump into stuff. I enjoyed the first one actually, because I was told it was boring and it was a chore to get through. So, and I was being told it was a setup movie. Like it was all 2.5 hours of setup. So going into it, I guess I was prepared for that. And my expectations were that. And I guess that's why I wasn't upset when I watched it. Because I'm like, all right, I'm watching this movie to watch another. That's my mindset going into this. Yeah, so, and I can see where that's going. This is like two action scenes that go on, and that's about it. I mean, the rest of it is a lot of explanation, a lot of setup and introduction for the world. But if you go into it with that mindset, I think you're like, all right, I know what I'm doing. I mean, it's a lot of setup. Yeah. Sure, but it's all right. I mean, I didn't dislike any of the characters. Like, the cast is insane.
Oh, yeah.
It's completely insane.
Like, I mean, that's the thing is, everything about it looks like it works. And I'm sure it's great. It's just something that I'm just like, it just didn't hit me at the right time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to see Dune Part 2 on an IMAX on Saturday. Saturday morning, I'm going. I'll let you know what it is. Angie actually went and saw it today because she might not be able to go with me on Saturday. So, yeah, I know. The one who, like, pushed me into it is, you know, bailed on me, basically. So it's a good thing I like the first one.
Solo.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm going to go with Steve still. And then...
Cool.
Yeah, so... Well, you know, I went alone anyway. I don't give a shit. It's a movie theater. I'm not talking to you during the movie anyway. So
I never understood why people don't like to go to the movies alone. It's like, we're not talking. And if you try to talk to me during the movies, we're never going again.
Yeah, like that's the end of it. but yeah, I'll let you know how it goes. But I mean, my expectations are high. I mean, people are talking like terms, comparisons are getting thrown out there. The Dark Knight. Empire Strikes Back. Cinema is back. All the cinema. I know. I think of Martin Scorsese every time I put that term.
Yeah, but see, I don't know. I mean, I would argue this. This is all I'm going to say.
Okay.
I don't know how much you can say that if you needed a whole three-hour movie to set up your piece of cinema. Like, you could just watch Dark Knight and get everything you need. You don't have to have seen the first one. It helps, but they give you what you need, right? Same deal with Empire. Like, yeah, you're better knowing how you got here, but it doesn't take too long to figure out, oh, they're being chased by people who are bad. Okay, I got it. Right? But like, if you need if this was written and could only stand with a 2.5 hour prop, I don't know. I think there's an argument to be made that maybe cinema's not back yet.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Maybe they do give you enough background for that. Yeah. I mean, I have no idea. Well, I'll find out on Saturday.
Yeah, let me know. Let me know what you think.
Our buddy Sam, he apparently also texted me last Thursday. Oh, you're going to see Dune tonight? I'm like, no, dude. Like, why is everyone asking me this? I'm the only one who apparently was... Well, I'm not the only one because apparently you were out on this too.
I was, yeah.
And he told me that the book was like 800 pages or some shit like that. And that like, yeah, the beginning of the book is a little slow. And then things pick up like around when this movie is supposed to be. So
what I've heard is there are like... Maybe I'm exaggerating and maybe this was exaggerated to me, but... I heard there's like 100 pages on the fucking tariffs of spice and shit. Like, they go real in depth into the inner workings of their society. And it's like, that's super interesting. Like, that's something I might listen to on like an audio thing, you know, like an audio book. But I don't know, man. Like, it's such a dense world. It scares me.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited to see the second one now that I got that out.
Yeah, hope it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really hoping so. But I also got to have time for my X-Men. They got 19 episodes in season 3.
Oh,
so.
God. And you know what? And normally I'm like, oh, my God, now there are going to be more episodes. Where am I going to find time to watch this? Because I'm always so busy. This 19, Aubrey, give me more. I'm flying through this, and I'm loving every minute of this ride.
Yeah, me too. all right. Well, before we jump into X-Men, we got a Borderlands trailer that I dropped about, I think it's about 2 weeks ago now. We're going to watch it together. All right. And we'll see what's up. And I'm going to just say, I don't know jack shit about this. I know it was a video game and that's about it. That's where my knowledge begins and ends with this thing.
And my knowledge is extensive because I have beaten the first one about 5 times. I've beaten the second one plus the DLCs about 6 times. And I've only beaten the third one once. But I was about to restart another playthrough when I got a couple of, like, some video games came out that took press priority. So I adore these games. So I know a lot about it.
Nice. And we got Fallout apparently coming in April, is it?
Oh, yep. April drops on my birthday, April 12th. Very excited about that, too.
Got some video game stuff. All right, let's check it out.
Uh-oh. God, I hate this planet. Would you look at that? A ladder! Unfortunately, my design doesn't facilitate this type of...
Well, destiny awaits.
Legend has it that there's this massive treasure hidden in some secret vault. And if you go hunting for it, you'd better take any help you can get. Because it's on the weirdest, most dangerous dumpster fire of a world in the universe.
God, I hate this planet.
What is that smell?
Piss wash gully.
Ew!
Put the window up.
I don't want to.
Roll the window up. Roll it
up. It's pee. It's pee. Why do you think it's called piss wash? How did it get the name?
It's in my mouth.
How many people have died? I'm looking for this vault?
We have something they don't, baby girl.
Okay.
What?
Major issues.
Time to make it rain! With your body parts!
What did I tell you?
Minimal
no
explosions!
I said no explosions!
Ooh, mine's bigger.
What are you doing?
I needed a gun.
So you asked for it.
There's only one of you in the world. You're special.
Uh-oh. Kill them all.
I'm expelling the excess lead. I can't go if you're looking at me. Actually, scrap that. I can. I really can. Actually, it's helping.
Are we really waiting for this to finish?
Keep looking at me.
All right. I mean, obviously, something not taking itself too seriously whatsoever.
As the game doesn't. Like, as someone who knows the game, this looks like it is matching the fucking tone of this game pitch perfect. I know these characters because they were all characters in the game. I know this means nothing to you, Ed, but the fact that they got Jamie Lee Curtis to play Dr. Tanis blows my mind because she's a bit older than her in the video game, but that's a brilliant choice nonetheless.
Okay, I mean, that's fine. I mean, it looks like a fun, wacky movie and stuff like that. I mean, my hesitation is only going to be the usual of it's based on a video game, which we both know.
No, I know.
History is not on its side. I mean, at least
nope.
Just because of that. You know, The Last of Us has not changed everything.
No, but I'm going to say this, right? From just this trailer, it looks like everything I've always wanted out of a video game.
Okay.
An understanding of appropriate tone and source material, and attempt to recreate some form of what people loved about the game in your movie. And it looks like this is, at least from the trailer, mm-hmm. I get that.
Okay. So judging the trailer itself, remember now on the trailer, good or bad trailer? Does this movie get you more excited than you were before you saw the trailer?
Oh, fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. This is a great trailer. I really enjoyed this. Like, because, and again, I can't divorce what I know about the game. So it's like, it's not like I can tell you how I would feel about this trailer cold, but knowing what I do about the game, you know, the fact Cate Blanchett, I love Cate Blanchett. Cate Blanchett's someone that I shouldn't find sexy, but I really do in every goddamn role she plays. And it's like, how, you're like an older woman. How are you this sexy? God damn it. Because I think she's really nailing like this character in this trailer. And again, I love these characters. The fact that Claptrap looks real good. Like that's exactly how he looks in the game. And I just think the CGI looks really good. Again, the music on this, the action scenes, showing the humor's on display, as well as lots of monsters. Like, I don't know, this just looks like, even if I wasn't a fan of the video game, this just looks like a hell of a good time.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm getting. It looks like it's a fun movie and stuff. Again, not knowing anything about the game itself, but it's something I would check out if we weren't even covering it. I mean, I know with the Regal Unlimited, I will probably check out most things because it's free, and if I got some time, I'll just go walk around the corner. But yeah, it looks fun. I'm excited to talk about this. Your excitement for the source material, it actually gets me more excited to that we're going to discuss this now, because I don't mind being the one who's like kind of going in completely cold on this.
I know we kind of flip now, because I mean I like comic books and stuff, but you know way more than I do. I'm always asking you about who's this, what do they do in the comic. I feel when we do the video game stuff, that's kind of my chance to go let me guide us for a bit, because I actually do know a lot about video games.
Yeah, I mean the only video games I would be able to maybe take the wheel on that is when we did Mortal Kombat. Right, but you also played Mortal Kombat.
I also played that. Mario Street Brothers, Fighter, but like, who hasn't played Mario Brothers? Yeah.
Yeah, we're
we haven't done Street Fighter.
No, we haven't, but I'm sure we will one day.
And, I know we will, because it's on the list of movies I swore I'd never see.
Oh, so that means we're going to stumble upon. You make me
break everyone!
I think I'm out. Pull me back in.
Pull me back in.
By the way, I have a list of movies. You know that. Like, on my phone, I carry a list of movies that
I know you do.
Yeah, no, I do. And they're mostly comic book related, but the video game ones, like, there's not as many. So, I mean, we can, if there's something coming out that we should cover it, fine. We come during, if we land during like a, you know, a dry spell or something like that, which this year could happen easily because, you know, there's not that many movies coming out. It's going to be mainly TV shows this year. So who knows? We might find ourselves watching Raul Julia and Jean-Claude Van Damme face off, unfortunately Raul Julia's last film.
I know. Geez, man. The guy was such a talented actor, and he did that movie for his grandkids, and that's his legacy. Oh, poor Raul.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But you get to see coked up Jean-Claude Van Damme run around for 2 hours as Guile.
What? That's great. And I don't even have to be a prostitute in a bar he's at.
All right. Well, listen, when Borderlands comes out, we'll be discussing that.
Excited.
Yeah, I think, yeah. So excited to chat about that. All right. So as you mentioned earlier, X-Men 97 coming out in a few weeks on Disney Plus on March 21st. So we are counting down week by week, a season at a time. But we're doing our rewatch because Jason and I have not seen this since they aired, right? Like you're with me, on this, right?
No, I'm with you on that. Yeah,
it was on Fox Kids, and we were, we were both 11? Going to 90 IS 93 at this time.
I was in 91, but yeah, same difference. Oh, okay. I mean,
yeah.
But we were like what, 10?
No, I mean we 11, had to be like, what 13, 12, 13 years old. This was 1993 now, season 2.
Oh, this is 93. Okay. Yeah. 13.
This 13, is just 14. Before IAT.
Oh, you're right. That's what you meant. Okay, yeah, yeah, you're right. I thought this was younger. Is that the school we were stuck in? The
on Forest? No, no, no. I'm talking about the middle school. Like you went to? Did you go to 93 on Forest Avenue?
Oh no, 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 no. Okay, I thought you okay. No, no, no. Okay. I went to 91. I was in Glendale, okay. But yeah. So we were about 14. That makes sense.
Season 3. Now that's freshman year of IAT.
And to be honest, I don't know if I've seen past this season.
Okay.
Not because I didn't want to. It's just I things changed when we got into high school.
No, of course. I mean, I'm pretty sure I did finish the series, or I don't know. We'll find out actually, because I know I was still watching it this time. I was definitely getting like flashbacks and stuff of watching a lot of these episodes. So yeah, we'll gaze over each episode and stuff like that through arcs and stuff. So season 2 opens up with episodes 1 and 2, basically being a part 1 and 2. I was like, till death do us part.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Morph is back. He's seeking revenge on the X-Men, and with the help of Mr. Sinister, who's teased at the very end of season 1, that he was creepily watching Scott and Jean, and as he proposed, yeah, that was just, I mean, he's a creepy fucking character, right?
Like, he's creepy throughout this entire season.
Absolutely. He's just creeping on them and watching them, and it's just, it's bizarre. But he is Mr. Sinister, though, so. So Death Through Us parts 1 and 2. And what else was there? Morph goes ahead and infiltrates the X-Mansion when he has this whole thing where he's, like, slivering his way through and changing into different people, and he does this weird shit with Logan and morphing into Jean, and then he lures in Gambit by making himself look like Rogue.
That's such a cool scene, just watching him systematically go from X-Men to X-Men, just like turning into the one he just got rid of. Uh-huh. And yeah, when he comes in and he's like, oh, Gambit, what if I can touch people? Come upstairs and meet me. It's like, oh, you know where that's going. You know exactly where that's going. But it's a brilliant plan. I thought, like, wow, this is devious.
Morph is a slithery, devious, like, that's a good word. Like, I'm not loving this character, honestly, upon this rewatch in these first two seasons. Like, I also think he's really annoying. Like, his voice and his whole laugh, it's yes. bothering me.
Yeah, yeah, he's an annoying character, but I like his arc, though. Like, I like...
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying, yeah, I don't disagree with that.
With him. But he's pretty, his voice and his laugh are annoying, and he is more trouble than he's worth in this season, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, Logan's the one who's, like, holding out hope, right? Like, throughout this entire season. Like, I feel like the rest of the team kind of moved on. Like, that was the impression I got. Like, they were all...
Oh, Morph! You're alive. Oh, we really missed you. No, your bedroom's still your bedroom. It's not my man cave now. No, not at all. No,
we can just give it to Jubilee and that's it. Like, that didn't happen.
Yeah. Oh, actually, yeah, because he does blame her for taking his place.
Yes, that's a thing he actually says. I'm like, yes. Holy shit, man. Like, I can totally understand why he's, like, angry and stuff like that. But there's also not, like... Like, if I remember correctly, too, the resurrection of Morph, because Sinister finds him right after, like, you know, and it's basically actually the first two episodes of season 1, where mm-hmm. the Sentinels, he takes a shot for Logan by one of the Sentinels and jumps in front of him, and then Sinister finds him and resurrects him, and I guess through his weird Mr. Sinister experimentation, that's how... That happens, because I feel like they don't really get too far into that.
Suddenly, Sinister can control
Morph. Basically. And we know Evil Morph has, like, these bags under his eyes. Apparently that indicates evil.
Evil, yes. Right. It's certainly not tired. or maybe
no, not at all. Well, he might be tired of planning this whole right. thing to take down the X-Men, I guess, his revenge plot. But and Scott and he also like fakes himself out as being the priest that marries Scott and Jean.
Yes,
and, like, kind of gets them off to this remote island, which we know is gonna, you know, like gets later revealed as the Savage Land, apparently, where Sinister was taken over after Magneto kind of ditched it for a while. Ah, there it is, Sauron.
Yeah, you nice. Knew he was coming out tonight.
Nice. And at the very end of episode two, there is like Charles and Magneto are also lured to the island to meet up, and like Morph is kind of like there's like an avalanche or something that's about to like fall on them and everything, and that's kind of they get sidelined for almost this entire fucking season until the last Look, episode or two. They're beasts.
They do. Yes, I agree. They are beasts. We just check in on them every now and then and watch them. Like instead of beasts going. I'm good. Just, you know, close my cell door on your way out. They're just like, well, still in the Savage Land. This is going somewhere, we promise. But I think the payoff at the end with those two, like just that last scene, because we're jumping around, right? Like,
well, I mean, well, I'm going
through you want to keep the all right, stuff, okay,
but
all right, because I'm just saying, like, the I think the payoff of them is really, really good.
No, I agree with you. It's not totally pointless, but I just, man, this it takes a while to get to it. I mean, we're talking about episodes 12 and 13, and after that, it's like, what are Charles and Magneto doing this week? They're fighting a dinosaur. Like,
they are.
That's what they're doing from week to week. It's kind of weird. Another thing that we see in here, though, is that Logan also decides to skip the wedding. Of Scott and Jean, he goes to the danger room to basically kill Scott in his training.
Over and over again. In his top.
He doesn't even change. He's in his tuxedo. So it looked like he was going to this wedding and then at the last minute was like, fuck it, bub. I go where I want to go. And I'm going to go to the danger room.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of crazy. See, he's... I think Wolverine's awesome in the season and in the series in general, but in this episode, it's like, I understand you like Jean, but you gotta just let it go, Wolverine.
You guys live in the same mansion. You need to get over this. She's made it pretty clear. She's not leaving Scott, dude.
Yeah. Dude, your work friends. I mean, just let's contextualize this.
It's time to get that on. We also, by the way, another thing with Morph before I get to the Friends of Humanity. Yes, exactly. Dude, he hits us with this before he goes to like go do this whole scheming thing throughout the mansion when he's changing into all the members of the team. He actually hits us with the making copies.
Yes, he does. You know, you're in the early 90s.
Oh, man. I was like, wow, Rob Schneider could have done this in like live action at this point. And I forgot to mention it last week, by the way. Cyclops does another joke in the first season that's awesome. And he's like, not. And he goes ahead and he like raises down his glasses and like hits him over the optic blast.
I did catch that one.
Yeah, it's a lot of Wayne's World and SNL jokes getting thrown around in here. In our Fox Kids Saturday morning cartooning. Yeah, so the other thing is we get introduced to the Friends of Humanity. So after Senator Kelly, at the end of the first season, he becomes President Kelly, and then he, you know, leads up this whole thing where he wants to make it, you know, equal rights for mutants and stuff like that. And there's a band of dudes who apparently used to support him, and they're not happy about it, and they call themselves the Friends of Humanity. And boy, are they, I mean, you might as well have just called them Nazis. The one leader's got this armband going around. No?
Come on. No. Are you trying to suggest that the X-Men were always woke? Is that what you're trying to suggest, Ed?
I'm going to use the term in air quotes because that's a whole nother thing that now, I don't even want to get into.
Dude, of course, these guys are your neo-Nazi KKK people. I texted you and Rick halfway through this season, like, how does anyone ever say this has never been woke before? And, like, woke is a bad thing. But, like, President Kelly literally says to one of these people, we have to affirmatively act to bring the mutants onto, like, a level, the same level as the non-mutants. It's like, so President Kelly, you want to enact affirmative action for a group of people who are not being treated fairly. When has the X-Men become woke? When did this happen?
I don't know. I think sometime in the 60s?
Right, when it was created? I think it's this episode because you see the Friends of Humanity on their tirade, and they this is shown in every single last time on X-Men, just to remind you how bad these guys are. And it's just like that sloth-looking mutant, and they're going to beat the shit out of him. He just goes, I don't have any powers. I just look different than you. And it's like, people who are complaining this is woke, what have you been watching? What do you think you're a fan of?
Yeah, I'm gonna just reiterate what I said last week about that part. Like, guess what? You saw the pictures and they looked cool. And yes, the X-Men look incredibly cool. But my guess is you didn't watch a single episode and didn't
read a single comic.
No, you didn't open it up. You collected them, maybe. You put them into plastic in the backboard, and that was about as far as you went with it. Like, come on. Also, let's not get it. Like, the other part of this is this was on Fox Kids, all right, 11 o'clock Eastern. Like, you can't even be like, oh, like, kids shouldn't. Come on, that's
stop.
Just don't act like,
yeah, exactly.
So whatever, yeah, those complain about some of the rumors out there about X-Men 97. Zip your lip, it'll be better like that, trust me.
Yeah.
All right. So, anything on the first two episodes before we jump to episode three? We got introduced to Shadow King.
No, that was super cool. Nope. Let's go to Shadow King.
All right. So, episode three, Shadow King shows up and possesses Mijnari, who in Africa, who apparently is like kind of like Storm is like his godmother. If you want to just call it that, I guess that's another way. Like his second mother, they refer to him as, just to try to explain the relationship there. But Shadow King does that to lure Storm back to Africa so he can go ahead and basically possess her and take over her body, because he tried to do this apparently previously on X-Men. Previously, before X-Men. And that was this whole thing. So there's this whole thing where she makes this swap and she's going to go ahead and offer herself to free Mijnari, and they end up trapping the Shadow King in the astral plane, and that's pretty much kind of what happens. Yeah, pushes him right back.
That's where he came from, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you saw that on what's it called? The FX show that you watched,
Legion.
Shadow King was on there. Yeah, Aubrey Plaza was Shadow King in the first season.
Yes. And then I forget who they got to play him, but he was actually really great, and he looked pretty comic book accurate.
Yes. And then the B plot is Logan is hunting down Morph, and that's what he was. So he's continuing his quest to not give up on his friend, and he's going to find Morph, and he's still out there somewhere, and whatever. I don't know. Another pretty cool episode there, I thought. It was cool to kind of like – I felt like this season does a pretty cool job of like really diving into more of the team's backstories here than we got in the first season.
I agree. I think this really does take what they did in the first season and really like pop it up a notch. Like, you know, we get a lot of backstory. We get some cool stuff between, you know, Professor X and Magneto. We get a lot of, again, really obscure villains. Like, we get You know who we get, guys. You know who we get in this one.
Oh, yes.
You know, like, it is such a wagon. And that's another thing, right? It actually takes chances. Like, that episode was tonally nothing like the other episodes that they did. But I respect they did. And again, I think it's because they're upping the stakes in the second season. They're giving us more backstory, taking more chances. And I really appreciate it. And I think it overall really works.
No, I totally agree. That takes us to episode 4, where we meet Omega Red, who was a weapon by the Soviet. Nice. Wow. Got an Omega Red. That's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
I've always dug Omega Red, by the way. I've always dug his design, like the whole character and everything like that. Like, he's pretty badass. So,
yeah, he looks awesome.
Omega Red was a weapon by the, former Soviet Union to go ahead and. He was pretty much a thing. He gets put on ice, apparently. I'm just going to read you my notes specifically that I made about this episode. This is my synopsis, right? And tell me if I'm incorrect. Omega Red tries to reunite the Soviet Union and gets hit with a tank by Colossus.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened.
I mean, dude, fucking Colossus slams a tank on this guy.
No, Colossus, I actually really love the way they portray Colossus in this, even in the beginning when he walks in, because, like, you know, the Friends of Humanity are all over this season, right? Don't you forget them. They don't go away till, I think, right before Savage the Mojo Land. Episode.
Oh, yeah, the Mojo episode and Savage Land. Yeah, so the last three episodes, they're kind of gone.
So they're in this. So we keep seeing them, and they're, like, harassing, a what?
Jubilee. So when we see them, when Colossus shows up, which I thought this was just kind of funny in a way, but, like, I guess they explain it a little bit more. So when Jubilee is at this supermarket, right, or this, like, newsstand or whatever, and the Friends of Humanity are harassing her, and they're going to fuck her up. And Colossus just happens to be strolling by in his, his white tank top again. And he's like, okay, let's go. I'm going to turn to steel and beat the crap out of you guys and everything. And Jubilee even says it, calls it out like, wow, thankfully you just happen to be here.
No, I love that scene. And it starts off with them harassing someone, the guy who works at this place, who is who's not white. So it's kind of, he looks like he could be an immigrant because, they've never been woke before. And they're harassing this guy like, we don't want your kind. We don't want mutants. We don't want this. We don't want that. And Jubilee goes in and kind of, she's in over her head, which is kind of foreshadowing for another episode. But Colossus is just like, oh, hello, comrades. It is I, Colossus. Oh, you think you're going to hurt me? And these guys wind up just running because this jolly Russian tank is just, he's that powerful.
Yeah, he is. And at least he even says, he hits Jubilee with a line because she calls out that he just happens to be walking by.
Yep.
And he's just like, well, I'm on my way to talk to the professor because, there's some basically talking about what's going on with Omega Red and he needed help with that. I guess he landed at an airport. Maybe he landed at LaGuardia or, JFK, and he was working his way upstate because, the X-Mansion is, supposed to be in Westchester, New York. So I guess that's what kind of happened. Because he really is just walking down the street when it happens.
Yeah. it's again. It's,
I don't care. I'm just busting.
Somehow jumps. Colossus was there.
Well, it just reminds me of another Marvel cartoon from the '80s that I've discussed, right? In Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, me and Tim reference this constantly, where Spider-Man and Firestar and Iceman are literally having a race through fucking Manhattan. And they happen to stroll by a roof where Dr. Doom is doing, like, a weather experiment on it. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? There's no explanation of why this is happening, any of this. It's hilarious. It is absolutely hilarious. It's on Disney Plus. If you just want to crack up, watch like the first 5 minutes of that episode, and you'll see exactly what I'm saying. I'm not embellishing this for comedy at all. It's exactly how it goes down.
Go look for that.
It's ridiculous. And in my other note for this episode, Charles and Magneto escape a T-Rex.
Oh, they do.
just by reading the notes, it sounds insane that Colossus hits Omega Red with a tank because he's trying to reunite the Soviet Union. And by the way, these guys are escaping a T-Rex. This is what we're dealing with right now.
I respect it. They go full Savage Land. Like, we get the Savage Land in almost every episode.
Yeah, no, they pepper it in and stuff, but yeah, Charles and Magneto are kind of the beast and get sidelined for a lot of this thing.
Yeah, but because the Savage Land is in every episode, you could really do that with every episode. Like, you know, oh, this is the episode where the X-Men try to stop these hate mongers from killing a blind girl. Oh, and Professor X uses a boomerang to get some pterodactyls to drop Magneto into the ocean. It's like, how is this the same fucking even season?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how they decided to go about that. I just felt like they kind of wanted to keep reminding you that they're there, that we didn't forget about them. Unlike in season one, remember, we clocked at episode 3 and 4 in season one. Gambit and Jean vanish with no explanation.
Gone.
Episode 5 was in our group text with Rick, because this is the Weapon X Wolverine origin episode through flashbacks, because he's being tracked down by Alpha Flight, who supposedly want him back, but they're recruiting him for the Canadian government here because they want to find out exactly how the hell, you know, did Logan survive the whole infusion of adamantium that's here. And he does call it out at one point. He's even like, I'm fucking healing factor. Oh, yeah.
The healing factor.
It was a rocket science. Only,
I got lucky.
Yes. Yeah. I'm assuming you gave me that because you knew I could survive it. Or maybe you just didn't give a shit.
No. They just didn't give a shit. They gave it to 12 other people. He was the lucky 13 that survived.
So, we meet, Vindicator, North Star, Sasquatch, Puck.
Puck.
Yeah, the whole Alpha Flight team that's there. Pretty cool to see them. I do like the way that this show does pepper in introductions to basically everyone in the X-Men universe. Their corner of the Marvel universe gets introduced like randomly through this. And I also sort of clock in the fact that this show is not an origin X-Men story. They do allude that there's a long history of all these characters prior to when we meet them in season one, which I kind of did.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the thing. The show is Jubilee's origin story.
Yeah.
But everyone else, yeah, they've been established and they've been operating for a long time. And I dig that too. Again, it's what we talk about now. And there was nowhere near the superhero. There was no such thing as superhero fatigue then.
No.
But, you know, but they were smart enough to not show us the pearls break off of fucking Martha Wayne again. Like, because we always say, how many times are we going to see that scene? We all know what went down. Just give us a movie. And this is the X-Men going, they get it. They know. Give them how Jubilee starts. They'll get everyone else on their own.
Yeah, like the X-Men were like the hot thing in Marvel like in the 90s anyway. So, and my other note, Charles and Magneto still in the Savage Lands. I don't even know what the hell they were doing that episode, honestly. I mean, it could have been a boomerang thing. There's always a little thing for like a minute or two that they're in the Savage Lands.
Yeah. I actually think that was the boomerang thing, because that was the one where I saw and I went, what the hell just happened?
And I'm going to, by the way, when Rick listens to this or if he's watching right now, I'm going to agree with him. Episode 5 of season 2 of X-Men the Animated Series, vastly superior to X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah, which we'll get to in a few weeks because we're going to be doing the live-action X-Men stuff once we're done with this. God. Yeah, that should be a roller coaster, to say the least. All right, so that takes us to episode 6, where Gambit is summoned back to Louisiana because there's this whole feud going on between assassins and thieves. And there's this, what the hell is it called? It's kind of this, like, this, whatever. It's a MacGuffin that has to be given every 10 years. Oh, yeah. That, yeah. You know, like, there, yeah. It's, like,
it's this, money, like, right? It's like a tribute.
Yeah, exactly. There's this, like, godly character that shows up once a decade, and they have to go ahead and give the tribute and stuff like that. But we find out that the assassins went ahead and, you know, took the thieves part of it, and they loaded it up with, like, some fake shit that was there, and she gets pissed at them, and, you know, it was basically a setup. Gambit's brother is used to help lure him back and lure them there. So we get to see some digging into Gambit's, you know, origin story there, which I had mentioned they pepper in throughout the season, that we get other characters that weren't really explored too much in season one here. Pretty cool episode, though. I thought it was pretty interesting to get some more backstory on Gambit.
Yeah, same. I liked it. I wasn't entirely clear on, like, the thieves, assassins thing. Like, yeah. But it was just cool to see Gambit's backstory, see his brother be in the bayou. Like, again, I'm really loving the choices and the chances the season is taking. Because this is a Gambit story, right? This isn't an X-Men story. They're not all tagging along. It's like Gambit and Rogue, right? Like, you know, it's a couple of them. But I like that they're, again, and we talked about this in the first season, they're really taking the time to have these character moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's this whole episode, even though I'm not exactly clear about the MacGuffin or the plot or where the hell this fits into the X-Men lore, I was just so interested in seeing the character of Gambit be explored. I'm like, this is great stuff.
Yeah, and we also do get, I guess it was the first sign that I recall catching, is how Rogue feels about Gambit. Because she's, like, genuinely, yes, like, hurt when she sees that there is a woman that's there that apparently Gambit, Remy, left at the altar.
Yes.
When he decided to leave. And she sees that and, like, you know, you can see, like, this is actually reciprocated. It's not just Gambit running around like Pepe Le Pew, you know, after Rogue all the time. Like, right, it's actually a two-way street.
And they kind of make that, like, clear in that episode, in, like, the second episode, where the payoff, which we didn't really get to, but we'll go back just a bit, where he kisses Rogue and all that happens, and she assumes he was, like, trying some, you know, some Pepe Le Pew shit on her. And he says, no, 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 Shag, Gambit does not go where he is not invited.
Yes, yes.
And I think that really kind of starts, because their relationship has an arc that, you know, crescendos at the end with Gambit saying, I've never said this to someone, but I love you.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? So, like, and that's the start of it. Again, this is a 13-episode season of a cartoon show for kids based on a comic book for kids that's giving us some real interesting, like, character arcs and watching these relationships build. Like, and again, this episode really does a lot of the heavy lifting on that.
Yeah, I fully agree. And then that takes us to episodes 7 and 8, which are called Time Fugitives. So basically we find out that there's a techno virus in the future that Bishop returns to his time, yeah, and we get they allude to this in season one, that nothing has really changed. And then we find out, yeah, that there's this techno virus that goes down in episode 7. Bishop goes back in time again, and he stops it from happening, right? Like, that's basically what he does. He does stop it. And then we find out, though, that Apocalypse is the one who was behind this techno virus and behind the Friends of Humanity, apparently, until they find out he's a mutant, even though he rejects that and says, I'm so far beyond mutants. Like, I'm so far behind both of you guys that don't dare call me either one of those. But then episode 8, Cable, we find out in his time that the techno virus actually has to happen, and he's totally disgusted. And he has to actually go back and stop Bishop,
yeah,
because it has to happen. But Cable, which I gotta say is a genius fucking move here, he realizes, oh, wait a second, I can't help Apocalypse straight out, right? Like, he's like a sworn enemy. I can't do this. I gotta get an antidote. I gotta get an antivirus, like, out there against this thing. And then he gets Logan to get infected with the techno virus because he knows he has the healing factor, which pops out the, you know, the whatever, the antivirus that's there.
Right.
So therefore, mutants can survive it when it does happen. So I thought that was pretty fucking genius. And it was awesome seeing Cable again.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I love the fact that it's like an oops, I did it again. Like, oh yeah. Shit, I gotta go back and stop the technovirus. No, wait, now I gotta go stop back to stop you from stopping the technovirus. But but I'm farther ahead than you. No, but my people die, but this saves my people. It's like the battle of the time travelers. And I love, mm-hmm. And again, you're right, it's a genius move. Like, all right, so we'll infect everyone, but then we'll cure them.
Yeah. So then, you know, they can survive it. I thought that was pretty fucking smart. Another thing that's interesting is their gene does look into Cable's mind, and they don't say it outright, but they allude to the fact that Jean knows that that's their kid. That is heavily alluded to in this episode.
I think I missed that. What'd they say?
No, she's just like, was it Scott says something to Jean? And Jean comes out back with the line of like, you know, oh wow, like he's more important to us than you'll ever know.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if you didn't know that that's their kid, then maybe,
right,
you would have put it together. But I was like, oh, the thing.
Yeah. Now, in the comic, is Cable born of them through like a Mr. Sinister thing, or is he like their like legit kid that they had and raised and he got the virus?
I don't remember. I'm going to be honest. I don't recall off the top of my head. I'm going to lean towards legit kid, but yeah, he's definitely like, you know, from their lineage. Let me say. Yeah, and I don't even know. I don't even recall, like, again, how far they go into it with the animated series. My guess is they're not going to set that up and not pay it off because Cable comes back, you know, later on in the series.
Right. So. Oh, yeah. And I'm actually really hoping, and I think we do, because I did have this action figure, and I think I had a lot of the action figures from this line. I'm hoping they explore Strife next season, which is Cable. I don't know if you remember, but Strife is Cable from another universe where he never got the technovirus.
Yeah. So I think they do go into Strife. Yeah, I think they do go into Strife, actually. Oh, if I remember
correctly. This is such a perfect like X-Men thing. Like this is to the X-Men as the animated series is to Batman.
When we're done, I have some questions for you to compare the two.
Okay. No, I'm in. I'm in for that discussion.
Because I think when we do episode 5, we're gonna have to discuss this a bit, and then we'll see if that one day leads us to a rewatch of that Batman animated series. I mean,
you know, I'm in for that. I own it on Blu-ray. I'll get my son to watch it with me. You know, I'm in for a rewatch. I love that show.
I just think it's a lot more episodes.
It is a ton. We would not be able to do a season a week. We'd have to do X amount of episodes a week.
So episode 9. Fascinating episode because now we get the Rogue, you know, origin story essentially. So we find out Rogue is getting visions of Carol Danvers. You know, in this she's Miss Marvel. She's not Captain Marvel in this. But she finds out that Carol Danvers is basically her mind is stuck inside Rogue when she ended up acquiring her powers permanently. That's how she can fly and that's how she has like the super strength that's there. But we also find out that Rogue was previously running with Mystique and, for lack of a better term, we'll just call this crew the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, I guess, in a way. Yeah. Like Avalanche, Pyro, you know, and Blob or and Mystique. They're just kind of running around. And Avalanche is just so lame. But, so we find out that was the case. And they were doing this whole heist. And Miss Marvel tried to intervene. And that's how she ended up absorbing her powers. She bounced on them, went to Xavier. And then that was that. Like, even in the Rogue and the Gambit episode, you know, shit was going down, and then Remy went to Xavier as well. And also, Carol, her body is in, she's in a hospital, and she's basically a Jane Doe and in a coma, And at the end of the episode, Ro goes ahead and goes back to her. And, you know, they kind of like bury the hatchet there for a bit. I thought this was one of the best episodes of the season.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they, you know, this is something that's like, well, actually, I was going to say, in the live action movies, Rogue doesn't have the Miss Marvel powers.
No, so, and I do, and I want to say this, I do appreciate that, and we'll get to that when we get to the first X-Men, but I appreciate that they give us, it's Rogue with Rogue's powers. They didn't try to shoehorn in, they didn't give us like, her powers are also to fly and be super strong, just because they took it out, and I appreciate that. But, and I say that because I really appreciate this show taking the time to do the legwork of the comic book.
You're right. Yeah, that's what we got to use as our cough button for a second. That's there. But yeah, I know, Jason, I'm going to follow up because I'm pretty sure I know where you're going with this anyway. Is yeah, like this Saturday morning cartoon, not to like beat it to death, but it does take the time to explore the lore from the comic books and how Rogue became to be, you know, she is arguably the muscle of the X-Men. In the animated series, like she is the most powerful one, hand to hand combat. Like yeah, she will fuck you up, man.
For sure, yeah. And again, in the comics,
she's their Hulk. You want to say?
Yeah, she is their Hulk. And in the comics, she starts off as a bad guy with her powers, which makes sense because it's traumatic to never be able to touch someone, and it makes sense to fall in with angry mutants and. We don't know what brought her necessarily to, the X-Men. No. Do we? Did they explore that in this one? Like, what it was that brought her to the X-Men?
No, not necessarily.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Okay. But we know in the comic that she comes there, and again, it's the attention to detail. Like I always say, like if you're gonna do something like this, know the source material, and honor the source material in a way that makes sense to your medium. And I've said this about the animated series, and I'm going to say it about this and this episode in particular. This is like reading a phenomenally written run of the X-Men.
Yeah. I will say, and I can't imagine my opinion is going to change over watching the next three seasons, is if you're not going to go ahead and you don't know where to pick up the X-Men and you wanted to know more because you kind of dug the movies a little bit, I would highly recommend going to Disney Plus and rewatching this.
Oh, yeah.
And you can also rewatch it and along with us and have some fun every week for the next couple of weeks with us. But this is it. This is the next best thing, I think, to reading the comics if you really want true, X-Men lore. So, episode 10 goes into where we meet up with Beast, and he's helping a blind patient named Carly that he's also in love with, and helping her get her sight back. So there's that whole thing, but her father sees Hank McCoy and is just like, "You're a mutant, get out of here, I hate you," and all this other shit. Like, he's this bigot jackass that's over there. Well, at the same time, speaking of bigot jackasses, Logan is going undercover with the Friends of Humanity to infiltrate their whole system.
I love undercover Logan. I love undercover Logan so much. Because Storm is like, no, it's got to be Jean. Jean must have said this because he doesn't listen to anyone else. Like, no, we can't just go and attack them. It won't make us look good. We have to do this quietly. And then he goes, quietly, I'll give you quietly. And then he puts like a scuzzy biker hat and a jacket, and he pretends to get the shit beat out of him by a mutant, and they take him into their like mist, and he's just like playing the part like, yeah, that stupid mutie took my job and then tried to beat me up. And it's love undercover Logan so much in this episode.
You know something, now that I think about it, I think it is Storm that actually says it.
Oh, is it Storm?
I think it is Storm. If I recall, I think it is Storm that goes ahead and actually reasons with him for once and lets him know that, like, yeah, because it's basically we go in there using force. It's gonna look like that we're vengeful and stuff like that, and that we, you know, we're just gonna flex our muscle whenever we can, and we got to kind of do this like the right way. But the stuff with Beast and Carly, I found really interesting. Again, for a Saturday morning kids cartoon over here, there's a lot there with it. There's a lot of, you know, like, again, with the father and the way the father's treating him and everything. And then when she can finally see, she, like, because he even says he was going to, Hank says he's going to shy away and do what's best for Carly. Because she, when she gets her sight, she wants to see Hank finally.
Yeah.
And then when she, you know, he decides to back away, but then he does show up that first day and she sees him and she's like, yeah, you're a mutant. I knew that the whole time.
Yes. Yeah.
Hank was scared that she didn't know that.
He's like, you knew? And she's like, Hank, I'm blind, not stupid. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You're full of fur.
I thought that was a really sweet moment there for Hank.
I did too. I thought that was an awesome moment. I think this is a great Beast episode. Beast is one of my favorite X-Men. I love his interaction with her dad, like after she's been taken, because she gets abducted by the Friends of Humanity. Because he's gonna stay away, and then he realizes, no, she wants me there. I want to be there. Fuck it. This surgery isn't happening. Wouldn't have happened without me. I'm the doctor that created this technique. And he goes, and the father gets pissed. But then after she gets taken, he grabs her dad, like, where did they take her? You want her back? You're gonna help me. And I love that moment. And it pays off at the end when the dad comes and he's like, Dr. McCoy, thank you for saving my daughter. And again, not to beat this dead horse, but, like, I don't know. When did the X-Men get woke? Like, how many times have we seen in history, like, no, I don't want that black guy dating my daughter. Like, just watch any movie in the 80s, and that's a punchline. No, you don't want a black guy dating your daughter. And this is another take on it. I don't want a mutie dating my daughter because ... overlooking their overall humanity. And this episode is like the Rogue episode. I feel it's really on another level because it kind of matches the tone of Beast. Because the Beast is like a very sweet soul who, if you fuck with him, he kind of riles up. And that's this episode. Like, it's a very sweet episode until you stir the pot and then shit has to happen. People got to get shut down. But then we go back to being sweet. And again, for a cartoon in the early 90s for children on Fox Kids, I mean, that's amazing work they're putting into this.
Great. But then the next episode, Jason, if we get to episode 1.
Yes, we do.
You've been waiting for this moment for over 3 years now.
I have. Mojo has been with us since episode 1.
Yeah, why don't you mention what happens in this episode? You can kind of take us through this one.
All right, so this episode, stellar episode, one of my favorite. I'm not even kidding. It's one of my favorites of these two seasons. It's a comedy. This is a comedic episode. Mojo is literally Harvey Weinstein. Like he sounds like that, and he's nasty, and he's rude. And he's got this British assistant, Major Domo, who is making fun of him. And his whole job, like, he fires Longshot, who isn't even, like, a good guy in this. He's just like, hey, you fired me. I'm your star. I want back in. You know, he's a good guy in the sense that he helps the X-Men? Question mark? Like,
yeah, sort of.
And then the whole thing is, like, Mojo finds something because he's in this different dimension where everything is reality TV, and he finds the X-Men and he grabs them all from their world, and you think it's gonna be like, no, we're gonna pit them against each other. He just puts them into shows. It's like,
yeah, he does. And who is it? One of them's like a Miami Vice type thing.
Yes, one of them is a Miami Vice thing. What's the other ones? One is like a horror thing.
I dream of Gene.
I dream of Gene.
Yeah.
Like, guys, I want I want an episode. I want a season. I want one season at the very tail end of the MCU when they're like, when they're trying to keep it together, but it's too far gone, because it's going to happen. It happens with everything. Nothing lasts forever. Yeah. I want them to give me a Mojo show where he's just plucking people from the Marvel Universe and putting them in fucking sitcoms and horror movies and sci-fi. Like, it's like, all right, what would it look like if Spider-Man was in a rom-com with the Enchantress? Let's see. Because that's this episode.
I can see that being an animated thing on Disney Plus where they just go with Mojo Vision.
Right, Mojo Vision. That would be great.
Yeah, I can see that. Did it live up to everything you wanted it to be? To have Mojo?
It was everything and more. Because I forgot what a disgusting and comedic character he is. Because, mm-hmm. again, my action figure makes him look kind of menacing.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, I've played the video game where he's menacing. I've seen certain things, like, comics where he looks menacing. This is just a comedy episode. And it's perfect because he's a ridiculous character. That's why I chose him to rally in our very first episode of, like, oh, no, I know what's going on in WandaVision, because he was the stupidest character I could think of. And now here it is. Full circle, guys. Full circle.
And at the end of this episode, Charles and Magneto see Sauron. That they literally see him at the end of the episode, and that's it. Yes.
I'm wearing a Sauron shirt.
A Sauron t-shirt. I love it.
It's the panel where Spider-Man goes, but you're so brilliant. You could do anything. With your knowledge and research, you could cure cancer. And Sauron says, but I don't want to cure cancer. I would use my knowledge and research to turn people into dinosaurs.
Sounds like the unamazing Spider-Sham.
Yes, it does, but it looks so much better.
Oh, 100%. I'd rather read your t-shirt over and over for 2 hours instead of watch that shit again.
Good point.
Then episodes 11 and 12 are called Reunion. And guess what? Finally, we get the Savage Land. So Charles and Magnus are there. The X-Men get lured to there. Wolverine is on his whole thing. He sees Quasar that's there. They go ahead and they team up. Charles is brainwashed into luring the X-Men there by Mr. Sinister. And then they have this whole battle with the Sinister goons, the goon squad that he has, when they don't, because when they get there, if you're not aware, the Savage Land, they don't have their powers. Like, Charles is able to walk as a side effect of losing his powers, which kind of actually somewhat, the movie X-Men Days of Future Past kind of calls back to that indirectly. I don't think it was on purpose, but I was watching Days of Future Past the other day again because it happened to be on FX.
In the comic, like, how, why can he walk? Is there a canonical reason, or is it just somehow he couldn't walk and they fill that in when they need it for the story?
I feel like there was an accident. I feel like there was an accident with Magneto.
Magneto, okay.
Yeah, I feel like there was definitely some sort of accident with Magneto. So they battle Sinister's goons, and then it cracks me up, though, because once that whole technology is taken away from them, then the X-Men theme starts playing, like, from the opening thing, and then they just wipe the floor with these fucking clowns. Oh. They run right through them. Like, they're fucking, like, wet tissue paper over here.
These guys knew from the very start they stood no chance that once the X-Men got their powers back, they were just stupid enough to think the X-Men weren't going to get their powers back. Because you're right. Like, the X-Men powerless put up a pretty damn good fight, considering they're fighting mutants with their powers. The X-Men with their powers, you almost feel bad for these guys.
Oh, they're the worst. They're just the worst of, like, the worst villains.
They're so pathetic that at the end of this, when everyone just kind of shoots and shoots and attacks Mr. Sinister and turns into a whole bunch of dust. When that small one of them goes out and starts collecting his dust, they don't even regard him as an issue. They're just like,
no.
Yeah, well, it'll take more than that. And Gene just kind of pulls him up and throws it away. But they completely ignore this guy who kicked their ass a couple of episodes, scenes ago.
Yeah, they don't give a shit. And Sinister gets you're right. Once he falls apart, kind of like, think of the T-2000 and Terminator 2, where he falls into these globs and then he has to reform. And we'll see Mr. Sinister again. Throughout the season and X-Men 97 and stuff like that.
He forms one of the last things we see in this episode is his face forming on the beach going, nah.
Two seasons in a row and the Mr. Sinister doing some weird creepy shit.
Absolutely. I do got to call out. I do got to call the awesome Wolverine stuff in these two episodes because Wolverine does some boss moves. The first being they're trying to attack these D-listers with their powers are attacking him. And they're like, yeah, you won't be able to do anything. He's like, yeah, schnick, schnick, nothing to do with mutating my mutant powers, bub. Goes at them. And then when that hurts when it comes out. Like they've established that. And then when he realizes that he can't beat them on his own, sans mutant healing factor, he just fucking jumps off the cliff.
Yeah, because he has no healing. So, he has to fight them straight out, which was pretty badass. I agree. There is a lot of badass Wolverine shit that goes on in these last shows. By the way, another thing.
He wrestles a T-Rex in this.
Yes.
He wrestles a T-Rex.
And that was without his powers, right?
Yes. I remember it. Yes, it was.
I want to call out, by the way, the shit that's gone on over the years with Cyclops kind of getting the shit end of the stick of being some sort of punk. When he sees Sinister and he gets angry at Mr. Sinister, he fucking drops the fucking optic blast on him and there is no holding back. He is screaming at him to bring it on, Sinister. He's fucking angry as fuck. And Scott's done some crazy shit in the comics where you can see the darker side to Scott in the comic books. But as far as it goes with the animated series, you can start seeing he's got some fucking rage in there as well.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
Don't sleep on him. Don't. He's not just this guy that, Wolverine. People think, Wolverine kind of, has a kick me sign on Cyclops and, gives him wedgies and shit. And, no, that's not how it goes.
No, I think what's beautiful about the Cyclops character, because I'm not a big fan of Cyclops, but I think that's the point of the character. He's a Boy Scout with a dark side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he, because of that, he overcorrects as a leader sometimes to do the right thing, but then he has these moments, and that can be seen in the X-Men versus Avengers run, right? I mean, he's super dark in that run.
Yeah, he is.
I agree. So I agree with you. Don't sleep on Cyclops. Love him or hate him. He's a very interesting character and an excellent member of the X-Men. Again, I'm not even a big fan, but he's a great
player. I like him. I like him in his first two seasons. I'm going to be honest.
I do too.
I dig Cyclops.
I like him in this. I'm not a fan of his overall in the comic stuff. This, I think he's awesome.
No, he's pretty cool in this, man. And then, Gene and Scott get properly married at the end of it and stuff like that. And it's kind of happily ever after until we see Sinister's face form on the beach and he does the whole evil laugh and I'll catch you next time, X-Men, and whatever.
And that's a two-part setup, too, because that episode ends with, they vanquish him and then Sauron, who's, just been sneaking about. He's not been really in the forefront, goes and blows the place up to get rid of them and says, ha ha, the Savage Lands interlopers are gone. And now its true power will be revealed, setting up oh shit, are we going to get Sauron? And then he leaves the beach and the Sinister's like, nah.
Yeah, there's still wacky shit going on here. And also at the end of this, to clarify, the X-Men fight side by side with Magneto. Against Sinister in this whole battle and his wacky pack of goons. that's there. And then, you know, him and Charles do have another moment where, you know, he's just like, hey, you know, we'll see each other down the line because, you know, I still have my beliefs, you have yours. We kind of got to go our separate ways. And I also think it's one of the most fascinating things about the X-Men in general is that, again, Charles, Xavier, and Magneto have that relationship throughout. They can't kill each other, but not like in the Batman Joker way.
No, they like each other. They're friends.
Yes.
They just, it's kind of like if you, like, you're two sides of the same coin, but you just disagree on social issues, but you can't get past it. You know, it's because this episode is rife with that, where in such a good way that, like, teasing out their relationship, because at one point, like, they because Sinister's whole thing is he's going to steal their powers and make super mutants that he enslaves. And he starts with Magneto, and Magneto's in pain, and Charles is like, leave him alone, you're killing him. And Sinister's like, do you think he would care if it was you? And then at the end of the episode, when the explosions happen, Magneto saves the entire X-Men by using his powers to keep the whole floor from caving in on them while they get out. So clearly he does care. And then it's that moment where what he says to Charles is, it felt good to fight on your side again. And Charles says, you can always join me. Come and work with me with my vision. And what he says is, unfortunately, that's impossible. We have different paths to tread, and only history will tell us who is correct. And it's like, and then he leaves, and they're both like, they're friends. Like, it's such a fascinating, and I think you're right, it is one of the most fascinating things about the X-Men, is that relationship that you can be genuinely close friends with your worst enemy.
Yeah, and I would venture to say is that the same people who don't really understand the whole X-Men thing probably think that that's crazy, that that's not a thing, that they're mortal enemies and stuff. It's like, not really. They're basically best friends.
Yeah, they're best friends. It's just Magneto thinks the best thing to do is to fucking rule humans, and Charles can't give out hope for peace, and that puts them into conflict. But I what's made clear in this is they'll fight each other when they have to, but they prefer to work with each other. And I don't think you get that in any other protagonist-antagonist dynamic in comics of, like, we'd work together if only we could agree, but we can't.
No, I agree. That's why I think it's part of what makes X-Men very interesting and extremely unique from, like, anything else really that's out there in comics whatsoever, is that the whole Charles and Magneto relationship. And Magneto also says a couple of times during this episode, he tells Sinister that when the X-Men are coming, he goes, the most powerful fucking mutants are coming for you guys. You know that, right? Like, they're going to fuck you guys up, man.
Do not underestimate the X-Men.
Yeah, he calls them the most powerful. Like, he acknowledges it fully. Like, this team is going to fuck you guys up, man.
He knows. And he also has a great moment, too, with Vertigo, because Vertigo is taking everyone down. And she's the only one of them that stands a chance after they get their powers back. And she's like, even your powers will not save you from Vertigo. And he just takes some metal with his powers and puts it on her face. She's just like, done. She's out. It's like, Magneto's so badass.
All right. Anything on season two before we wrap this one up?
I think the only thing I wanted to touch upon too that we kind of glossed over and missed was the Friends of Humanity. The whole where that goes, like where that ends, is the guy who's in charge is a mutant, and not just any mutant, Sabretooth's kid.
Oh yes, that's right.
Which Wolverine recognizes, and I actually, again, I love undercover Wolverine because he's like, you remind me of someone. Someone I knew, a kid one time. And the guy's like, yeah, we never met. I grew up in Canada. I was in Canada. And Logan just looks at the camera and goes, so was I. Yeah. I love that.
Oh, wow. Alex has got a quick comment on here.
Well, Thanks for listening, Al.
Yeah, you've been with us since the first one. Absolutely. Episode 150. You guys are getting old. Eh. State of mind, baby. That's what it's all about.
And in my mind, we've been on for 150 years.
Exactly. But, Alex, you should go on. I don't know if you've seen the X-Men the animated series. You should definitely go check that out, man. I think you would dig it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You would, Al.
All right, so I think that pretty much wraps it up for us this week. Thanks for joining us as always. We will be back next week discussing season 3 of X-Men the Animated Series, a little bit longer, 19 episodes for seasons 3 and 4, before it goes back to 13 for season 5. So, hey, if you want to check it out with us and join along on the ride, you're more than welcome. It'd be awesome to have you come in and drop some more comments. Joining us on the Facebook live stream, sure to check out Granny's Peach Tea. And check out our Facebook group where we share a bunch of like stories and trailers and whatnot on a regular basis that don't make the shows. You can go ahead and check us out there. Check out Pop Culture Pros because that's who we are presented by, popculturepros.com. If you're checking us out on YouTube, subscribe to Pop Culture Pros. And on X, you can follow at Pop Culture Pros as well. And wherever you found your audio-only podcasts, subscribe to Pop Culture Pros. Oh, we got a couple of comments. Oh, well, here we go.
Yeah. Yep.
Alex, again, I'll check you out. I'll check it out, but I'm definitely going to rewatch the old X-Men movies before Deadpool 3, as are we, because we're going to be covering a movie a week once we're done with the animated series of X-Men. We already have it planned out. Every single X-Men movie from X-Men all the way, we'll wrap it up with Deadpool 2 right before Deadpool and Wolverine drop. So go ahead and check that out. That's true. I'm sure we'll be opening it up with that week when we do Deadpool. That'll definitely be our song of the week. So,
oh yeah.
All right. So we'll see you all next week. Peace.
Later. So.